Today we'll be continuing The Scarlet Letter by Nathaniel Hawthorne. Chapter 6, Part 2. The truth was that the little Puritans, being of the most intolerant brood that ever lived, had got a vague idea of something outlandish, unearthly, or at variance with ordinary fashions in the mother and child, and therefore scorned them in their hearts, and not unfrequently reviled them with their tongues. Pearl felt the sentiment, and requited it with the bitterest hatred that can be supposed to rankle in a childish bosom. These outbreaks of a fierce temper had a kind of value, and even comfort for her mother, because there was at least an intelligible earnestness in the mood, instead of the fitful caprice that so often thwarted her in the child's manifestations. It appalled her, nevertheless, to discern here, again, a shadowy reflection of the evil that had existed in herself. All this enmity and passion had Pearl inherited by inalienable right out of Hester's heart. Mother and daughter stood together in the same circle of seclusion from human society, and in the nature of the child seemed to be perpetuated those unquiet elements that had distracted Hester Prynne before Pearl's birth, but had since begun to be soothed away by the softening influences of maternity. At home, within and around her mother's cottage, Pearl wanted not a wide and various circle of acquaintance. The spell of life went forth from her ever-creative spirit, and communicated itself to 1,000 objects, as a torch kindles a flame wherever it may be applied. The unlikeliest materials, a stick, a bunch of rags, a flower, were the puppets of Pearl's witchcraft, and without undergoing any outward change, became spiritually adapted to whatever drama occupied the stage of her inner world. Her one baby voice served a multitude of imaginary personages, old and young, to talk withal. The pine trees, aged, black and solemn, and flinging groans and other melancholy utterances on the breeze, needed little transformation to figure as Puritan elders. The ugliest weeds of the garden were the children, whom Pearl smote down and uprooted most unmercifully. It was wonderful, the vast variety of forms into which she threw her intellect, with no continuity, indeed, but darting up and dancing, always in a state of preternatural activity, soon sinking down as if exhausted by so rapid and feverish a tide of life, and succeeded by other shapes of a similar wild energy. It was like nothing so much as the phantasmagoric play of the northern lights. In the mere exercise of the fancy, however, in the sportiveness of a growing mind, there might be little more than was observable in other children of bright faculties, except as Pearl, in the death of human playmates, was thrown more upon the visionary throng which she created. The singularity lay in the hostile feelings with which the child regarded all these offspring of her own heart and mind. She never created a friend, but seemed always to be sowing broadcast the dragon's teeth when sprung a harvest of armed enemies against whom she rushed to battle. It was inexpressibly sad. In what depth of sorrow to a mother, who felt in her own heart the cause, to observe in one so young this constant recognition of an adverse world, and so fierce a training of the energies that were to make good her cause in the contest that must ensue. Gazing at Pearl, Hester Prynne often dropped her work upon her knees, and cried out with an agony which she would fain have hidden, but which made utterance for itself betwixt speech and the groan, "O Father in heaven, if thou art still my father, what is this being which I have brought into the world?" And Pearl, overhearing the ejaculation, or aware through some more subtile channel of those throbs of anguish, would turn her vivid and beautiful little face upon her mother, smile with sprite-like intelligence, and resume her play. One peculiarity of the child's deportment remains yet to be told. The very first thing which she had noticed in her life was, what? Not the mother's smile, responding to it as other babies do, by that faint embryo smile of the little mouth, remembered so doubtfully afterwards, and with such fond discussion whether it were indeed a smile. By no means. But that first object of which Pearl seemed to become aware was, shall we say it, the scarlet letter on Hester's bosom. One day, as her mother stooped over the cradle, the infant's eyes had been caught by the glimmering of the gold embroidery about the letter, and putting up her little hand, she grasped at it, smiling. Not doubtfully, but with a decided gleam, that gave her face the look of a much older child. Then, gasping for breath, did Hester Prynne clutch the fatal token, instinctively endeavoring to tear it away. So infinite was the torture inflicted by the intelligent touch of Pearl's baby hand. Again, as if her mother's agonized gesture were meant only to make sport for her, did little Pearl look into her eyes and smile. From that epic, except when a child was asleep, Hester had never felt a moment's safety, not a moment's calm enjoyment of her. Weeks, it is true, would sometimes elapse, during which Pearl's gaze might never once be fixed upon the scarlet letter, but then again it would come at unawares, like the stroke of sudden death, and always with that peculiar smile and odd expression of the eyes. Once this freakish, elvish cast came into the child's eyes, while Hester was looking at her own image in them, as mothers are fond of doing. And suddenly, for women in solitude and with troubled hearts are pestered with unaccountable delusions, she fancied that she beheld not her own miniature portrait, but another face in the small black mirror of Pearl's eye. It was a face, fiend-like, full of smiling malice, yet bearing the semblance of features that she had known full well, though seldom with a smile, and never with malice in them. It was as if an evil spirit possessed the child, and it just then peeped forth in mockery. Many a time afterwards had Hester been tortured, though less vividly, by the same illusion. In the afternoon of a certain summer's day, after Pearl grew big enough to run about, she amused herself with gathering handfuls of wildflowers and flinging them, one by one, at her mother's bosom, dancing up and down, like a little elf, whenever she hit the scarlet letter. Hester's first motion had been to cover her bosom with her clasped hands. But, whether from pride or resignation, or feeling that her penance might be best wrought out by this unutterable pain, she resisted the impulse, and sat erect, pale as death, looking sadly into little Pearl's wild eyes. Still came the battery of flowers, almost invariably hitting the mark and covering the mother's breast with hurts for which she could find no balm in this world, nor knew how to seek it in another. At last, her shot being all expended, the child stood still and gazed at Hester, with that little laughing image of a fiend peeping out. Or whether it peeped or no, her mother so imagined it, from the unsearchable abyss of her black eyes. "Child, what art thou?" cried the mother. "Oh, I'm your little Pearl," answered the child. But while she said it, Pearl laughed and began to dance up and down with the humorsome gesticulation of a little imp, whose next freak might be to fly up the chimney. "Art thou my child in very truth?" asked Hester. Nor did she put the question altogether idly, but for the moment with a portion of genuine earnestness. For such was Pearl's wonderful intelligence that her mother half doubted whether she were not acquainted with the secret spell of her existence, and might not now reveal herself. "Yes, I am little Pearl," repeated the child, continuing her antics. "Thou art not my child. Thou art no Pearl of mine," said the mother half playfully, for it was often the case that a sportive impulse came over her in the midst of her deepest suffering. "Tell me, then, what thou art, and who sent thee hither."
"Tell me, mother,"
said the child seriously, coming up to Hester and pressing herself close to her knees.
"Do thou tell me."
"Thy heavenly father sent thee," answered Hester Prynne. But she said it with a hesitation that did not escape the acuteness of the child. Whether moved only by her ordinary freakishness, or because an evil spirit prompted her, she put up her small forefinger and touched the scarlet letter.
"He need not send me,"
cried she positively.
"I have no heavenly father."
"Hush, Pearl, hush, thou must not talk so," answered the mother, suppressing a groan. "He sent us all into this world. He sent even me, thy mother. Then, much more, thee. Or if not, thou strange and elfish child, whence didst thou come?"
Tell me,"
repeated Pearl, no longer seriously, but laughing and capering about the floor.
"It is thou that must tell me."
But Hester could not resolve the query, being herself in a dismal labyrinth of doubt. She remembered, betwixt a smile and a shudder, the talk of the neighboring townspeople, who, seeking vainly elsewhere for the child's paternity, and observing some of her odd attributes, had given out that poor little Pearl was a demon offspring, such as, ever since old Catholic times, had occasionally been seen on Earth through the agency of their mother's sin, and to promote some foul and wicked purpose. Luther, according to the scandal of its monkish enemies, was a brat of that hellish breed. Nor was Pearl the only child to whom this inauspicious origin was assigned among the New England Puritans. Thank you for joining Bite at a Time Books today, while we read a bite of one of your favorite classics. Again, my name is Bree Carlisle, and I hope you come back tomorrow for the next bite of The Scarlet Letter.